Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams. Daniel, good to see you.
Good morning, Dr. Paul.
Good. The weekend is over. The meeting has broken up. Trump is back in Washington, and peace has broken out in Syria. That's hope. We want to talk a little bit more about what went on. There was both talk. The coverage was more about, hacking and who's telling the truth and how much pressure Trump put on Putin and how it's being spun. I just wonder, since I don't know, on the hacking business, the interpretation, each side has to look tough and each side has to win. I just wonder if these two guys get together. Hey, let's say this, you spin it your way and I'll spin it my way and CNN will spin it their way. But anyway, it's important, and it's an issue, and it looks like it's getting stickier than ever. But there was a lot more coverage on that type of thing, that the politicization of that, than there was on what we're going to spend a fair amount of time on today, and that has to do with Syria, because we've had a different opinion than the Russians. We really engaged more so with Syria than Russia did when Obama got involved and said Assad had to go, and then the Russians had to come in and rescue him, and now it looks like the Russians are winning. But this confrontation or meeting between Putin and Trump was significant, and everybody was, in pins and needles what would happen. And I would have to say, superficially, when I look at this, nothing overly major happened, but there have been some doors open. I don't think that things have gotten worse, from this. And there might be, movement in the right direction, but there are some winners and losers here. And there has been the announcements in the past, let's have this no-fly zone, let's work this out, and we'll work with the Russians. The next day we shoot down a Russian airplane, it's back and forth, and you don't know who's changing policies or who's sabotaging why. But right now, it looks like the Russians and the Americans have worked it out that there would be a ceasefire zone. And I would have to say this is a good step in the right direction. And we can talk about winners and losers. But if this works and holds, I would say that this could be a victory for the American people.
Yeah, I think there's good and bad in the agreement. And of course, we haven't seen the fine print. I don't think it's really been put out there what exactly will happen. Apparently, they've been working on this behind the scenes for a couple of months, and they chose this time to really unveil it. But on the surface, I think the pros would be it certainly reduces the tension between Russia and the U.S. in Syria. And I think that's extremely important. And I think the personal touch, personal diplomacy we've seen through history has often produced positive results. So I think in that respect, it is a very positive development, sort of in the macro sense. But when we get down into the trees of what's happening here, I think that's when maybe we'll discuss a little bit about the downsides of this agreement.
Yes, and there's so many factions. There's several factions of people, of individuals fighting in the East who will be taking over some of this land, Al-Qaeda and Al-Nusra, and of course the Turks are involved, and the Kurds are involved, and there's a lot of different groups involved. But I think Trump, it doesn't look worse. I think he actually, if you look at it superficially, it looks better that he was able to talk to people, not get too excited and work a deal. But there, what gave me a little of encouragement is the reaction from the neocon. Immediately, though, our media, who were the experts to dissect this out, they had to go to Graham and McCain to find out what was going on. They weren't too happy about this. That's an indicator worth looking at.
Yeah, I think just when the whole Russia hacking story had taken some really serious hits, the New York Times has had to backtrack on some stories. AP had to backtrack. We know what happened to CNN recently, how they've had to backtrack on some things. So just when this was starting to ratchet down and really essentially fall apart, I think you're right. I think the measure of the success of the meeting was the fact that all of a sudden, only thing the media was talking about was the Russian hacking again.
Yeah.
And here's CNN. Trump won't refute Putin-Russian account of meeting. Trump amateur hour with Putin threatens our security. you know.
Well, in a way, you know, if you're really into conspiracies, maybe there's a bit of contriving on this and doing their best to avoid, you know, the big issue, which is the foreign policy issue. Where are we going to go? Are we going to bring our troops back? Will this help? You know, is Assad going to stay? And who's going to own Syria? And those are the big issues. But, you know, the media, they generally don't get into this because you can't, if I'm looking for, or you know, what the media is saying, you can see MSNBC and you can look at Fox, and which one is most hawkish? You know, they're both supporting it, and the orchestration against Russia is uniform. I mean, it's Russia phobia, you know, constant, day in and day out. And that raises another question on, you know, exactly where we stand on this, because the people get awfully confused. And we have a confused policy there. There's no doubt about that. It's not like, you know, we declared war and we're going to fight to win and we're going to be done in 6 months and we're going to own Syria. No, you can't do that. That's too aggressive. Oh, we shouldn't be there. We didn't declare war. We've been there for umpteen years and we've been in Afghanistan. It's time to surrender and come home. I think in a way, this is a mild form of surrender on U.S. policy. And if I were a neocon, I could see why neocons would be upset, because all of a sudden they're backing away from a very aggressive program, which we want to complement or encourage. But another problem we face trying to figure this out is what is the position of the administration? You know, even though this is lightening up, we can talk to Putin and work these things out, but we're not going to take off any sanctions. We should add more sanctions. And just recently we had this vote 97-2 to put more sanctions, you know, on Russia. So it's a schizophrenic type of foreign policy.
And that's what worries me about the Syria agreement. It looks good in many ways. It certainly will hopefully ratchet us back away from World War III with Russia. But, you know, in the details, has the U.S. policy, has the U.S. goal of regime change been overturned? You know, it had been just before this, what we consider a false flag chemical attack back in April. Mm-hmm. And then everyone jumped out and said, regime change again, we got to get rid of him. So now has that softened? Is it a strategic retreat? In which case, that would be a positive thing. I worry, however, that the neocons are going to see the writing on the wall and say, okay, we're not going to get exactly what we want, but within this agreement, we got to get a lot more U.S. troops in there to monitor the ceasefire. We got to get in further than we are. We got to get more bases. And I think that's the danger.
They're going to protect the president from making a bad deal. Trump needs help from the neocons to make a better deal. But I think this whole issue of sabotage within the administration, it's a monolith. There are so many different groups, not only foreign groups in Syria, but what about in our own administration? Does a president have absolute control over 17 intelligence agencies? Do they have absolute control and know what the CIA is doing? Do they know exactly what the Pentagon's doing? Do they know what the generals are saying? Because the generals are getting more authority than ever. And to control all this, I think there's a limit to this, especially if the policy is not precise. I think that's what we need, always need, but more so than ever, because it's this ambivalence that pops up when you see something like this. Well, what is Russia a friend or aren't they a friend? Should we work with them or not work with them? What should we do with them on trade? No, we put on more sanctions, but we're going to work out this deal in Syria because we're friends again.
The other thing that's concerning about this particular area where they're having this partial ceasefire is it really continues the fallacy that there is this thing called an armed rebel groups that are not jihadists, that are not terrorists. You know, I just wonder in the U.S. if there was an armed rebel group seeking to overthrow Washington, if anyone would find any faction of them to be moderates. You know, there's no moderate when it comes to that. And so we've been here before, and it seems like every time these people are on the ropes, especially the U.S. backed groups are on the ropes, the U.S. cries uncle and asks for a ceasefire, and the Russians seem to go along with it every time. So I wonder if this is just another one of these dances that they do.
But some of the groups are associated, but not intensely so. I think it's important to mention that group. And that one would be Iran.
Yeah.
You know, some people are saying, you know, Iran didn't do too badly here. And they're not going, even though they've been sort of friends with Russia right now, their ultimate goal for Syria is not the same.
Yeah.
Russia is more likely to accept a divided Syria, which is, I think, what they're working for. Iran wants it unified. So, but Iran came out pretty well in the Iraq War.
Yeah, not bad.
So they're winning so far, and they're not doing a lot of the grunt work. But then we have Turkey. They weren't involved in this negotiation, and they have things at stake too. If you were representing the Turkish position, without making a judgment on what the Kurds should have or shouldn't have, I always like self-determination, but that's not available right now. All the Kurds coming together and having self-determination because they're in several countries. But the Turks aren't going to go easily if the Kurds get a piece of the action. And they had a piece of the war.
Yeah.
They might have been very instrumental in getting them to this point. It wasn't our soldiers on the ground. It was probably our money and our weapons and all that kind of stuff. But you have the Kurds, and also Israel's very much involved in this, too. They have stepped over boundaries down there, and they're very firm on what they'll do to protect themselves. So Israel probably didn't do badly or won't do badly if this thing becomes more permanent.
And they may actually be doing even better. The Haaretz, which is the Israeli newspaper, reporting today that Israel wants U.S. troops, not Russian troops, to patrol that area closest to the Golan Heights, which, of course, is Syrian territory that's been occupied by Israel since the 67 war. So they also don't want Iran or Turkey involved in the process. They want this totally separate from the Astana process, which produced the original de-escalation zones. And Haaretz also reported that U.S. and Israeli officials are working very closely to establish or to understand the Israeli position, to present that to Russia, so to make sure that the Israeli demands, as Netanyahu said, are kept in mind. So they're certainly very active on the sidelines to make sure that area will come out to their advantage.
In a way, it suggests to me, anyway, that it's almost like an extension or a duplication of the Golan Heights, you know, where the boundaries are what Israel makes them, and it's for their national defense purposes. Well, this, in a way, will be, I mean, the boundary lines are going to be very fuzzy there, and what you've suggested there is they want to make sure that their friends are, you know, defending or protecting that territory. So it's always room for more problems. You know, this is I think a dangerous area because the people who don't like this, and there will be a few groups, and we've mentioned them already, and we've mentioned them even in our own government, that generally speaking, these types of agreements, which is not a surrender and it's over with, but somebody is going to want to mess it up in out of their interest. Even if you give Putin and Trump 100% positive attitude, they're doing their very, very best, and they're very, very sincere, and they're up to no tricks. There's somebody, just think of these groups. They have an interest in this not working.
Yeah.
And then it explodes again. This is why, guess what? I think non-intervention is the best place to be and not have to speculate, anticipate in who's doing what and invite six or eight different groups fighting over a country. And this is all, you know, contrived by outsiders. I mean, what most people have been told is it's all because all of a sudden, out of clear blue, Assad still started gassing his own people, killing tens of thousands of his friends.
Just for fun. Yeah.
Just for fun, and it's all his fault, so we had to get rid of him, just sort of like Saddam Hussein. People who are overstepped their bounds. They're imperfect for sure, but all of a sudden now the goal is to get rid of them and look at the results of whether it's Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, or whatever. Even Libya is not doing so well either.
Well, you know, a central part of that whole scenario that was justification for U.S. involvement has come undone. And I know this will shock you, but the mainstream press has not reported it. However, the U.N., which has never been pro-Assad by any stretch, they came out with a report last week saying that 500,000 refugees have returned back to Syria. And guess where they went? They went to the areas that are now controlled by the government, the places that have been freed from ISIS and Al-Qaeda and moderate rebel control. So you're having a 500,000 people coming back. So are they suicidal? Do they want to go to the places where Assad will gas them? Or do they realize that if they're from religious minorities or ethnic minorities or what have you, they feel more protected? So the whole basis for the U.S. intervention is now coming apart.
And you know, if this report is authentic, probably is, that's more important than all the other news you hear, because they're voting with their feet.
Literally.
they leave when they think they're all going to get killed, and they come back because they want to stay in their hometown. Not everybody is a migrant trying to get into Europe.
Yeah.
And that was, of course, a rigged type of thing, too. But now they're going in the other direction, which means that there has been a definite military victory, for Assad, at least not a total victory, but for now it's a victory, and it's a victory for Putin, it's a victory for Russia, and we can put a smiley face on it and say, well, this is not so bad, we're friends with Russia, which is fine, we shouldn't even be there. This would have, even if there had been a serious problem, with Assad, it would have been settled, without us. We didn't help it. We made it much worse. But I think that statistic might be one of the most important things to show that things have changed and that they are not going to be getting rid of Assad. But, and we've talked about this on other programs, what's going to happen to the eastern part of Syria, the different places? How are the factions going to divvy up the land and the power? And how are they going to solve the problem of the Turks and the Kurds and the al-Nusra and al-Qaeda? I mean, that still has a long way to go.
Yeah, it does.
So how would you summarize this up, and what do we expect here?
Well, I might humbly offer some advice to our president.
Okay, that's
good. Mr. President, you need to order a national intelligence estimate on the so-called Russian interference in the elections. This is a canard that 17 agencies approved it and said that they did it. It was not true. Clapper on May 8th admitted that it was only three agencies and they were handpicked analysts from those agencies. It reminds you of the intel about Iraq. So if Trump really wants to get behind this and find out what's going on, he should order an NIE throughout the entire intelligence community, including State Department's INR, to take a look at this and come up with a full report with full footnotes of agencies that disagree, of analysts that disagree. Let's get it all out in the open, and then we can finally move on. I don't know why he hasn't done that yet.
I think it's a great idea. Let's just not put Clapper in charge. Clapper, they still call him up to sort this out in the media. Clapper said this. Do they ever say Clapper's a liar?
He lied over and
over. Under oath. No, they want to do that. It's just horrible. No, that's a good suggestion. If there's any remaining element of credibility in our government and our intelligence agency, this might revive them, because probably it's still true that the majority of the people that work there have been convinced that they want to do what's right for the United States, and they don't want to participate in these lies. So, yes, if we could and settle it, it shouldn't take that long. I often think about what's going on when it comes to this whole argument over the election, is that the media and others just throw something out and then make charge it. And they're saying, prove it's not true. Prove it's not true, and you have to prove this negative. It's not like in a court where you have to prove you're guilty, prove you're guilty. No, they just throw it out there. And I think what Daniel suggests is a good idea. Maybe if they would do that, we would settle this. Certainly what's going on now just makes it worse and worse, more questions are raised. But I think that we should be not discouraged by the meeting. It was better than not having a meeting. I think it came out better. I sort of indicated that maybe superficially this would come out pretty well, and it is, and Trump's not looking too badly. But we still have a long way to go, because both sides believe in foreign interventionism, and both powers are all over the place. And some, accept, Americans accept the fact that we should be, because we're spreading using exceptionalism. You know, I saw one commentator the other night talking about this, and they said, well, somebody called in and said, you know, we've been involved in these elections for a long, long time, and we've been interfering. And the host, which was, said, the host agreed. He said, yeah, that's true. But we only do it for goodness sake. We spend our money to bring about goodness and spread American exceptionalism, and didn't deny the fact that we're more involved probably than any other country in the world involved in the elections of other countries. That doesn't justify ignoring totally what the Russians have been charged of doing, but a good thorough examination could settle this within several months. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.